This is a recording of Lawrence A. from South Central Los Angeles with Crystal H.'s warm-up speaker, taped at the first California Mid-State Regional Convention for NA in Fresno, California, on Friday, June 29, 1990. In observance with the 11 traditions stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
Okay, I would like to introduce our short speaker, Crystal H. from Borrego Springs. Borrego. I have to take off my shoes. My name's Crystal. I'm an addict from Borrego Springs. God, this makes me so nuts. So nervous. I finally figured out why this is so frightening to me. And, you know, it's like one of those things that if I get up here and I tell you who I really am, who Crystal is, maybe you won't like me. Like I could give a fuck. People you hate to like you. You know, you'd be trying to hate that bitch, but I hope she likes me. We're so sick, you know. I really feel honored to get to speak at this convention, your first regional convention here, and the reason that this is real special to me is because this is where, Fresno's where I found Narcotics Anonymous, where I found recovery. And, you know, like I was just passing through on my way to nowhere. On my way to the grave. and I found NA here. And that was 9.5 years ago. And it has never become necessary for me to get high since then. And, you know, like I left here when I'd been clean 11 days, you know, I just kind of buzzed through and picked up the meeting, and it was like, I'd been involved for about 18 months in the other program, you know. And I didn't do their drug of choice, so it was cool, you know. I did my drug of choice. It was like they would tell me, oh, keep coming back, it gets better, and it kept getting worse, you know. And when I had first become affiliated with that organization, I had all that stuff like the job and a kid, you know, and a car, and a little white German Shepherd, little chickens. And after 18 months, I didn't have anything, and I was unemployable. I was homeless, and I was like hitchhiking around with my Alpha Beta Samsonite. And I came to Fresno because I had a friend here who I hadn't used up because she moved to Fresno. So I came here to use her up. And through a set of weird circumstances that I choose to call God, I got to Narcotics Anonymous here. And it was like, you know, we talk a lot about never feeling like we're a part of. And I had heard of Narcotics Anonymous. But, I figured Narcotics Anonymous was a place where all these old junkies went, you know, heroin addicts, you know, people who slammed heroin. And I never slammed heroin. And I only snorted heroin. And I only slammed cocaine and speed. So I knew I wasn't a junkie. And I knew I didn't belong in Narcotics Anonymous. And, but see, I couldn't quit getting high. And, So I was in this meeting of the other brand, and, you know, I think it's just ridiculous to go through all this euphemisms for that program, but, you know, I mean, we all know what I'm talking about, right? It ain't Weight Watchers. But I went to this meeting because somebody came and got me, and then, you know, they wanted to talk about honesty, and they called on me, which was a real joke. And I thought, oh, well, fuck it. You know, I'm just going to tell them I got loaded again last night. And see, I thought it was like, I'm sober, you know, short of being entirely recovered. And, but I have a little problem with marijuana, currently. And, you know, like, after this meeting, these three really good-looking men came up to me and said, you know, we have Narcotics Anonymous here in Fresno. They could have said, we have hell here in Fresno, Crystal. Would you like to join us? God knows how to motivate my ass. I like men. And, so they gave me this phone number to call, only it was a chick. And I got to that meeting. It was a Friday night meeting up at the hospital. It's around here someplace. And there were six people there, and they were all heroin addicts. And I just felt like I was at home, and I was so comfortable, and I knew I was in the right place. And I heard things I never heard before, you know, and it was like the level of comfort and the feeling of belonging spoke so eloquently to me, you know, that I was able to go back to where I lived, which was in the middle of these little mountains in San Diego County where there was hardly any of even Brand X meetings, and stay clean. At the time, there were only four meetings in San Diego County of Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't have a car or a job or a home. And, you know, like, I just hung out, but I knew that there were other people like me that were in a 12-step program, and that, you know, I wasn't the only addict who was going to, you know, practice these principles and do this, and do the deal here, you know? And, God, my recovery has been an amazing thing, you know? I didn't even get a real job till I'd been clean 2 years. It was so fucking lame, you know? And, I mean, you know, it's just like staying clean a day at a time was a big deal, but, you know, we started Narcotics Anonymous in that little town that I lived in, and pretty soon we had two NA meetings there, and pretty soon we had a bunch of NA meetings, and pretty soon the meetings went way up in the mountains, way down in the desert. And now that little back country is an area. And, you know. And right now we have 14 meetings, but sometimes we have 18 and sometimes we have 12 because, you know, that's how that goes. In the town I live in, there's only one NA meeting a week. And there's only, you know, like there's, that's this wonderful thing about our little meeting. There are six of us. And we just, the six of us, you know, and we all knew each other's shit. Nobody cared anymore. Nobody wanted to own the box. You know, nobody wanted to open the meeting. And I'm the chair of the area, so I certainly don't want to do any of that shit. And anyway, one night this girl called me. She said, we're bringing my sister to the meeting. You know, she wants to clean up. And I called my friend Scott. I said, goddamn, we got a newcomer. We all showed up at the meeting, man, you know, we were real spiritual. We went and screwed the top of her head into our recovery, and, you know, threw her head back together. She brought another newcomer the next week. A couple weeks later, we got another newcomer. Last week, we had two new newcomers, you know. One of them isn't San Queen, but so far the rest of them are. You know, it's like we've almost doubled our numbers in less, like, 2 months. And the amazing thing is, you know, we always say, the newcomer is the most important person, you know, and we all be going, fuck those newcomers bugging me all the time, calling me up and running. Call them locks behind their back, yeah? But the wonderful thing that's happened in little Obrego Springs, which is in the middle of the desert, it was 120 acres last week. This is like being in paradise. Is that those newcomers have pumped so much energy and so much positive stuff into our little group that it's like we're all just jazz, you know, and like we're all just doing NA. And, you know, seeing that happen is so exciting. And, you know, I remember when I came to NA in Fresno, there were only two meetings a week here, Friday night and some other time, I don't know. You know, and now you're a region, you know, and that's just like, to me, that's just God working, you know. And I know that God has worked in my life and through my life, you know. One of the benefits of my recovery has been, you know, like, I always felt like I was one of those people that probably didn't have the right to take up the air I was breathing, you know. And real low self-esteem. I mean, you know, suicide was like a step up, you know, the action, you know. And because of my experience of recovery, what I have experienced is that I've been able to give to other people what was freely given to me and affect their lives in a positive manner. You know? I'm just a dope fiend. I'm a liar and a cheat and a thief and a whore. You know, and if it ain't nailed down, it's mine. And if it's, if I can pry it loose, it ain't nailed down. You know? And here I am, you know, being like an acceptable, responsible, productive member of society. You know, I pay so much taxes it makes me want to fucking puke. I got a dollar an hour raise a couple of weeks ago, about 2 months ago, and I get $11 of that 40 and the feds get 29. You know? I'm in that tax bracket. Me. And, you know, it's like to be able to be the person I am today and to have the ability to look at my life and see that, you know, I've been able to touch other people is such a wonderful thing. You know, it's such a gift. I believe that recovery is a gift. I believe that it's the state of grace. I read that the definition for grace is an undeserved gift. And if anybody was more undeserving of the gift of recovery than I was, you're probably here. I knew you'd get it. Anyway, I don't know, it's like, I'm so, I don't know when to stop, you know, like, that's why I'm here, because I don't know when to stop, so I'm watching this watch. They gave me a watch to come here, and I'm so sure I'm going to talk too long that, you know. But I don't know, I really like my life today, and I like who I am today, and you know, I still, it's like I didn't just get to come here and just work these steps, and then I get to sponsor people, and now I don't have to do anything about myself, it's bullshit. You know, I can get myself into so much trouble so fast that it's amazing. I was telling my hairdresser this story. I'm going to tell you real quickly, and she told me I shouldn't be allowed to speak at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. I should know the only people who understand this are the people in NA. My boyfriend quit drinking caffeine about in April, you know, and it was like a big deal that he quit drinking coffee and caffeine, and so I thought, well, shit, if I don't stop drinking caffeine, I'm never going to hear the fucking end of this, you know. Everything will be because I drink caffeine. Always look at your motive. So I quit drinking caffeine. I did really well for about three weeks, you know, and then pretty soon I just have a little cup of coffee. Little less iced tea. So we go along, you know, and it's fine. And every morning I get up and take my little thermos of decaf and go off to work. And a couple of weeks ago he said to me, he goes, I said something about drinking a lot of water. And he said, well, I noticed you haven't been drinking your coffee because you bring your thermos home full at night. And I said, oh, well, we got a new water cooler at work, which we did. So we're getting ready to go down to Rosarita Beach in Mexico for the weekend, and I, like the night before we left, I'm laying in bed and I thought, oh fuck, there will be no coffee down there. I'll go into caffeine withdrawal, start having a bad headache, and we'll have a bad time in Rosarita Beach. So I made a thermos of coffee and hid it in the trunk of my car. And I got up Saturday morning, went outside to pick the flowers. And that all came just fine to me. So I shared about it on Monday night in my NA meeting, and I thought, you know. So I came clean and told them about it. The part that bothered me really was the lying, not the addiction to caffeine. And I'll do that when I've been clean 15 years. Or something. Anyway, see, I'm an addict. This has been really really thrilling, and what an exciting thing, you guys, that region with a convention, you know. Damn. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank my friend Barbara on the committee. She made me send my own speaker tape, though, by God. I didn't get this for nothing. Anyway, I want to thank you all for sharing your time with me. I really believe I'm over 40, you know. And now I know that, listen, you'll be over 40 one of these days, too, if you play it straight. I believe that the most precious thing that any of us has to share with one another is our time, because now I know that it's limited, you know, and I'm real grateful to you all for sharing your time and coming here and listening to my words. And God bless you all. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker, I had the opportunity to hear when I had about 6 months clean and sober in Buena Park, I believe it was. And he was talking about relationships. And one he couldn't let go of. And he went to his sponsor. I remembered this because we drove home. It was like a chant. And it goes, "Cut it loose, home! Cut it loose!" And it was so funny. And I love this. I love his whole share. And have since seen him around and have really had the opportunity to appreciate him. And that's Lawrence from Southside, L.A.
My name is Lawrence, and I'm a drug addict. And they call me Beaver. Yeah, cut it loose, cut it loose. Oh, that was a relationship. Oh, that was a relationship. Freddie M. from San Jose was riding shotgun, you know, at that time in San Jose, you know, it was a practice that when you were going through one of the relationship breakups, you know, you hooked up with somebody and he rode with you, you know, because you weren't in a safe place, you know. And I would tell him, listen, I saw her, man, and she smiled. He said, "Cut it loose, cut it loose." And he had been riding with me for about 6 months, you know. And he was up to here with, you know, because I was there, wah, you know. And one Sunday afternoon, I went to the 4 o'clock meeting, you know, and I was walking in, and he saw me, and I saw him, and I said, "Listen," she waved to me. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And he just started backing up, and he said, "Cut it loose! Cut it loose!" And he just started backing up. And so I finally had to cut it loose, you know. Anyway, I'm real glad to be here in Fresno. Fresno is a very important place for me in my recovery. It's very emotional for me because this is the town that I took my last fix in. This is the town that I had a spiritual experience. And I've made a 180 degree turn, and I'm back here to share that with you. And I want to talk about my recovery. I arrived here on February the 20th, 1974. I got off the Greyhound bus depot, and I already knew where to go because I had keistered 5 spoons and I had a half a spoon in my hand. And they told me, just walk across the tracks, man, you'll be in Chinatown. And that's where it's happening, you know. So I got here about 4:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock, you know. And so I walked down the street, and I got up, I think, F Street. And I said, well, I'll go in one of these little cafes here, you know, and I'll wait for one of them dope fiends to come out, because I know they're going to be coming out around 6 o'clock, 5:30, you know. And I'll have an outfit to use. So sure enough, you know, I'm sitting there in the cafe, you know, and here comes a dope fiend coming out of this hotel, and he's on a crutch, you know. And he's greasy like a slice of bacon. And so I jumped out of my seat, you know, and I walked across the street and I said, listen, I said, have you got an outfit? An outfit? And he says, you want to score? I said, no, I got it. You know, he said, yeah, you know. So I proceeded to drop the stash on the hour, you know, because I had keisters. And I used up all the dope that day. And by that time, you know, I got some information that there was a detox in Palo Alto. And so that night I had 1 spoon left from the morning. And I slept at the Salvation Army. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever slept at the Salvation Army here in Fresno. But they take all your clothes away and they put them in a little basket, you know, and they give you a little nightie, you know. And I had the spoon with me, you know. And I didn't know what to do, you know. You know, I didn't know where to stash it because I didn't want to lose it, you know. And I'd have it in my hand and then I'd put it in my pillow, you know. And I couldn't keep it in my mouth because what if I swallowed it during my sleep, you know. And so that's how it went that night, you know. And finally in the morning I got up, you know, and I fixed it. And I got on the highway. And I was right outside here on the highway on 99, and I was beginning to withdraw. And this farmer picked me up, you know, in a little truck, you know. And he said, where are you going? I'm going to Palo Alto. You know, he says, well, I'm going to San Francisco, I'm going to the market, you know. He said, I'm a farmer, you know. And he was an Italian, you know. Because he started singing an Italian song later on as we're going down the road, you know, and he had his arm out the window, you know, and the window on my side wouldn't roll down, you know. And I was beginning to withdraw, you know. And I was withdrawing, you know, all the pain came to me, you know. And it was really a pain, you know, that I hadn't experienced before. Because by this time, you know, I had, you know, I had been to them penitentiaries and them youth authorities and juvenile tanks and them county jails, you know, and I had been through the whole scene, you know. I was, you know, as they say, I was a regular, I was hardcore, you know. I had a nickname. My name was Beaver, and I was from a neighborhood. I'm from Florence, on the south side of Los Angeles, South Central LA, you know, and there I was, you know. In the same state that I had always ended up in, you know. And this time I was alone, and I was 500 miles away from home, you know, or 300. And the pain, and the pain came. Yeah. And so I turned to God, and I was going to make the deal with Him, like I had done, all those other times when I was in a bad spot. And I started to say, if you get me out of this, and the words froze in my mouth, because I couldn't do it. Because I had asked God a lot of times, and I had always broken my end of the deal, So what I did is I questioned Him. I remember, looking up, and I asked God, I said, when is it going to stop? When is it going to stop? And there was a sincerity that I have never had before and I've never experienced again. And it came from somewhere. I don't know where it came from. And this power, which I choose to call God, heard me. And I didn't know it. And I ended up in a hospital because I got so sick. And that hospital was DMC in San Jose from Palo Alto. They sent me there. I went to the hospital there and they told me, we don't have a detox here. So I went to San Jose. And there they told me they didn't have anything for me either, except there was a drug abuse clinic on the grounds. And they would direct me. And they gave me a bag of Valiums. And this was in 1974. So I took the Valiums. And being a dope fiend, and being, like we all are, living by our wits out in the streets, I had my game plan together. I said, well, I'll just take me a handful of Valiums and I'll go to the lobby and I'll stretch out on the couch, and if somebody says something, I'll tell them, well, my wife's having a baby up on the third floor and I'm waiting for her. And so I stretched myself out on the couch, and I woke up in the morning and they were vacuuming around me, And I got up and I went to the bathroom and I dropped another handful of Valiums. And I went over to the drug abuse clinic. And they made arrangements for me to go to a recovery house. And that recovery house was Pathway. And I want to say that I came through a Narcotics Anonymous recovery house. The message was carried to me by an addict. The first program that I worked was the program of Narcotics Anonymous in the little white book. And I'm proud to say that. And at that time, there was just a few of us. And that's all we had was a little white pamphlet. And I used to work that program just for today. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in a name. And so I began this journey. But when I walked in that recovery house, I didn't know what was going on, but I was glad to be there. And they had coffee and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, man. And I was hungry. And I walked in, man, and if you've ever been to Pathway, man, it's a nice recovery house. And they had a shower, man, and they had big full-length mirrors, and I had a clean little bunk bed, and I said, shit, this is it. Shit, I'm staying. I'm going to play my hand. And so I stayed there and I kicked and it took me 21 days. And I was hearing all this new language. All these sayings, easy does it, and just for today, and first things first, we care and we love you, and don't take nothing and total abstinence, And I sat at the back of the room, and I watched them. And I look up at the wall and they had 12 steps on the wall, and I hear these people talk about that they were dope fiends. They were addicts. And I sat at the back of the room and I said, well, I'll just kick my habit, get myself together, get my health, man, and I'll book. Because I looked at the steps and I said, you know what? It's too Mickey Mouse for me. I need something profound. I'm a dope fiend. Yeah. What are you talking about? And I'm just for the day and easy does it. First things first, and we love you. You don't even know me. Yeah. I'm Beaver, man. I'm from Southside Los Angeles, man. I'm hardcore. Don't you know who I am? You know, I'd be saying this in my head. I'm a convict. I'm regular. And I'd go to these meetings, you know, and they'd be up at the podium, and they'd be pitching, and they'd be talking about that they were real dope things. And so I'd sit at the back of the room, and I'd say to myself, well, if you're like me, if you're really like me, I'm going to catch you, because I know you're going to get loaded, and I'm just going to wait on you, if you're like me. And so I waited. And they kept coming from the streets, you know, and sharing, and they were staying clean, and they were talking about it was getting better, and da-da-da, and the flowers, and, you know, and picnics, and dances, you know. And I just kept listening, you know. And then one day, you know, I said, you know what? You got to participate in your recovery. They're going to ask you to leave. So being in them institutions, you know, I knew that I had to play my hand because I wasn't ready yet. So I went to the podium to share, you know, and I was in a lot of pain, in a lot of emotional pain. You see, because it wasn't the times I went to jails, you know, and kicked, you know, or the times, you know, I had guns stuck in my face, you know, or I had been stabbed, or I had been, you know, beaten up, you know. That always passed, but it was that emotional pain. See, I'd been hurting for years. And I couldn't tell anyone. See, oh, I might tell a stranger, you know, in a bus station, you know, or on a bus sometimes, you know. I'd never see him again, you know what I mean? It was safe. But I couldn't tell homie. Oh, I couldn't tell homeboy, man. You know what? I'm hurting, Holmes. I couldn't tell homeboy. He turned me and you know, he'd probably, you know, if I'd have said something, he'd probably tell you, what are you rolling over or what? So I went to the podium, you know, and they told me, share how you're feeling, you know. That's what I like about Narcotics Anonymous. It's about feelings. And so I went to the podium, you know, and I said, you know what? I'm lonely. Oh, man, I had thought I had turned cock right there. And I felt like I was going down like this. There I am, the bee from South Central Los Angeles, the regular, the hardcore, the convict, and he's standing there with me saying, I'm lonely. I said, if the fellows could only hear me now. But that's how I felt. I was all alone. Oh, I had been up north on one of them buses, you know, on my way to Soledad or Tracy, you know. This time, you know, it was different. And a guy from the back of the room yelled out, "You don't have to hurt anymore." And that's when it happened for me. My ears just went up. And I continued to share, and he yelled out again, "You don't have to hurt anymore." You see, because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to stop hurting. See, I had to come out of them penitentiaries, you know, and I would make, you know, them vows, you know, that, I'm not going to use, Holmes. So I'll just smoke a little weed, drink a little wine, but I'm not going to use. You know, and then I'd use. Or I'd come out and I'd say, you know what, I'm not going to take nothing. And I'd be all by myself. All alone in the neighborhood, and everybody's getting loaded except me, you know. And I'd end up using again. So when he said that, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to look into this thing. Yeah. And I began looking into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and I made a decision to buy it. And I bought it. I mean, I bought it lock, stock, and barrel. I mean, I got self-righteous. I got arrogant. I began to wave the banner of Narcotics Anonymous, man. I got to pounding on the podium, man. I got to reciting the steps. I got to talking program. And my peer group would look at me and they'd say, he's lost it, man. He's lost it. And if you had had a dream that you had took something, man, don't talk to me. If you had went out and got loaded, don't come near me. If you're not talking about the steps, avoid me. I was fanatical, narrow-minded. And the dinosaurs on the program, man, they loved me. You know, the ones that had time, man, tapped me on the back. My peer group hated me. Oh, I was pitching a meeting, and I could just hear him, man, that arrogant mother, you know. Look at him, man, you know. I had a very fearful recovery. And I went on like that. And the days began to pass, you know, and I got healthy. And I began to understand this program. You know, and learned, you know, the sayings and the whole bit, you know. And I looked good. I looked good. Sounded good. Got his program back. This guy's serious. Except for George and Pauline Perry, you know. They saw me at the back of the room and it says, Villa Rosa, and he ain't gonna make it. But anyhow, you know, the days kept coming by, you know, and I got healthy and I left this recovery house and I had it together and I went into recovery and I started working in recovery and I was saving them by the hundreds. Oh, I was healing. I was just healing every time I spoke. I was just healing. You know how we start to heal people, you know, when we got, you know, we come into this program. I mean, it was right away, you know. Oh, you got to get on the fourth step. Oh, no. You should be on the sixth step. Oh, it's time to take the second step. I was healing. And my peer group, man, was just resentful. They'd sit there, you know. So I had no understanding. Yeah. All I had was cold data. But I looked good. I was clean. I had graduated out of recovery house. I had my own car. I was working in recovery. Oh, I looked good. I sounded good. I made it the first time. And the months kept coming by. Oh, and I looked good, man. Shit. And so the years continued. You know, 3, 4, 5, you know. And I'd sit out there, you know, in the back of the room, you know, with my legs crossed, and I used to smoke cigars at that time, you know. And I'd hear the women pitch. And the women would come up with time. Yeah, women had 4, 5, 6 years, you know. At that time, that was a lot of time. And they'd be pitching, you know, and they'd come up and they'd go, wah, 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 wah. And I'd sit in the back of the room with my legs crossed, you know, arrogant, self-righteous, and narrow-minded, you know. And in my head, I'd be saying to myself, what's wrong with the bitch? She's got 5 years. Jesus Christ, she's got an apartment, she's got a brand new car, she's getting laid. What's wrong with the brown? Get on the steps, call your sponsor, write an inventory. And I'd sit back there, this would be going through my head. You see, just arrogant and narrow-minded. And you couldn't touch me because I was clean. And I made it the first time. I mean, what could you say against me? I made it the first time and I was clean? Working in recovery, saving hundreds? Healing? Had money in my pocket? Hey, I was doing it. And I looked good. God, I looked good. Waving the banner of Narcotics Anonymous. Running with the winners. I mean, when I was in a recovery house, you know, my peer group would say,
come on, where are you going in the past, man? We're all going to go to Marietta. We're going to go to Santa Cruz, you know. Where are you going, man? I'm going with staff. And they'd look at me. You fucking punk. He's going with staff. You see? But the reason that I went with staff is because staff had it. See? Staff had the program. Staff had the best game going. And I wanted that. And so I ran with the winners. You know? And they hated me. God, they hated me. Resentful. And so the years kept going by. Boy, and I just got looking better and better and better and better, man. Shit, I was driving a new car by this time. Working in another recovery house, man. Saving thousands this time. Went to the Lancer Street, learned to play the game. Oh, I played attack therapy. Oh, did I play the game. Oh. Because they had, you know, the game at the recovery house that I was working in was half and half. And from there I came back to my alma mater, Pathway, and I was the court liaison. Oh, shit, I was Perry Mason. That's what Freddy M. from San Jose used to call me, Perry Mason. And my standard response to the people that I would take in the court was, don't worry, Holmes, I got my arms around you. And I was bringing them in from them jailhouses. I was not only saving thousands, I was getting people released from jail. And I looked good. God, I looked good. You know. And I was still at the podium, pounding. You know? Just healing. Just healing from the podium. And the years continued. You know? So when I had about 7 or 8 years, you know, I met this woman. And by that time, you know, I had already had my first relationship, the one that talked about Cut It Loose, that was at 3 years old. That was my first relationship. I dated for 3 years. Oh, they talked about me, man. You know, called me a male whore. How could they, man? Oh, the women used to just get down on me. You're a male whore. You know. Don't go out with him. All he wants to do is lay you. You know. And I used to wonder myself, oh, she's going out with John. I guess John don't lay. It's a dumb logic running around here at times. Oh, don't go out with him. All he wants to do is lay you. Go out with Ronnie. You know? Like Ronnie's a translator or something. I don't know. And anyhow, so there I am and I meet this woman, you know, and by that time, you know, I'm dated out. You know, it gets old. You know? It gets old. And so I meet this woman and I fall in love. And it was great. It was great. And then about 2.5 years, this marriage lasted about 5 years. You know, and all that time, you know, I was still looking good. I left recovery, I started my own little business, you know. I had a new truck. I married a woman who had a condominium in town. I said, shit, I'm a homeowner now. And then she wanted to buy a mobile home in Morgan Hill. I got two homes now. By that time, I had bought a pedigree dog. So I'm a homeowner with a pedigree dog, a new home, a big-legged woman, and a brand-new Toyota truck. And I look good. And I'm still at the podium. Not as much. I'm picking my shot. Because I look good. And I got time. I'm sitting way at the back of the room, you know. I don't raise my hand anymore. I wait for them to call on me. Because after all, I've got time. And I look good. And I'm a homeowner. And I got a pedigree dog. And so then this marriage begins to fall apart behind some issues that I want to get into. And so 2.5 years ago, you know, this woman said, I want a divorce. And being grounded well in this program, you know, by those that came before me, who taught me well, people like Joe Melita, who passed away with 19 years, Mike Sheridan, who passed away with 18 years, I had learned that when it was over, it was over. And it was my business, you know, to keep my side of the street clean and to take care of my side of the street. Yeah. And so I packed up my little sign kit and I put my ladders in my truck, you know, and I took my pedigree dog, Pepper. I got a little German Schnauzer. And I got in my truck and I left San Jose and I went home to South Central Los Angeles. You see, I was raised on the south side of Los Angeles. On the south side of Los Angeles, not like the east side. The east Los Angeles is all Mexican. The south side, man, it's half and half. See, so sometimes when I introduce myself, I say that I was raised on beans and greens. When you talk about barbecue, to me, you got to talk about showing up barbecue. There's a difference. And so I went home back to Mom. You know. And my heart was broken. I was in a lot of pain. You know. And so I began to utilize the tools of this program. You know. And I stayed out of relationships. You know. And for 19 months, you know, I worked with this program and I wrote, you know, and I shared. And I went to meetings and I kept up myself. And I took care of me because that's what I was taught to do. You know, I had some good teaching in San Jose. Yeah. And one day I ended up on a job out in North Hollywood. You know, and I'm coming from the ghetto, you know, and I thought to myself, well, I'll go downtown. You know, I'll drive down Broadway. It's a beautiful sunny day, you know. And I said, I'll go downtown, man, you know, and then I'll get on the Hollywood freeway, you know, and I'll work my way into North Hollywood. And so I'm driving down Broadway and it's a beautiful day and I'm listening to the music. And all of a sudden I went into a depression. I didn't know it was a depression. But I went into a depression and I wanted to die. Yeah. And it wasn't about picking up a gun and putting it into my head. It wasn't about going over the railing and the freeway. You know, it wasn't about running, you know, myself into a wall. I just wanted it to happen. I just wanted to die. And it shook my butt. You see, because I had 14 and a half years, you know, and I didn't come to this program, you know, from day one, and I hadn't taken nothing, and I had read the steps, and I had taken an inventory, and I ran with the winners, and I went to meetings, and I went to conventions, and I prayed, and I believed in a God as I understand Him. And I had bought this program lock, stock, and barrel. And NA was a way of life for me. And there I was with 14 and a half years in a depression, you know, and I wanted to die, and it frightened me. And I remember my mind reacting like a pinball machine. And the ball just bouncing back and forth in my brain, panicking. What step should I get on? I better call my sponsor. I better go to a meeting. What's wrong? What do I got to do? It frightened me. And I went on to the valley, and I did the job. A couple of days later, you know, I was still, you know, thinking about this, what I had experienced. And I ended up in a recovery house in East Los Angeles. They were having an anniversary, and I was there, and I was
leaning against the garage on a chair, you know, and this chick came out that I knew from San Jose. She's originally out of Venice. Her name is Susie. And she saw me and she said, "Hey, Beef, what's happening?" She said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "No, I'm fucked up." She said, "You want to talk?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Come on in the office." So I went in the office with her. And I sat down to her and I shared with her, you know, that I had gone into this depression. And that I wanted to die. And that it had frightened me. You see, because, you know, the culture that I had come from, suicide is for cowards. You see, and I had been in the penitentiaries, you know, and those that took their lives, man, you know, like JC knows, man, you're weak if you're going to take your life. You see. That's how significant it was for me to have that kind of thought. And so I shared it with her. And her having less time than me, she didn't know what to say. You know, so she handed me a couple of tapes and she said, "Listen to these, man. Maybe this will help you." And then so at the end of the day, I climbed in my little Toyota truck, you know, and I put the cassette, you know, in the holder, you know, and I got on the Long Beach Freeway and I was heading for South Los Angeles, off on Firestone, make a right-hand turn, and come on down. And this guy began to talk on this tape. And he was a dope fiend. And he had 17 years and he was a convict. And he had been labeled by the state of California as a social psychopath. And he had 17 years being clean. And he was sitting on the edge of his bed in a penthouse by the ocean with a white Coupe de Ville Cadillac in the garage. And he had just signed a contract with 20th Century Fox for $250,000. And he wanted to take his life. And he had written 32 inventories. And he was a dope fiend like me. And he began to talk about a child. He began to talk about a little boy. And he began to talk about this little boy and I broke down and I began to cry. And I broke down and I cried and I cried. Pulled over to the road and I cried and I cried and I cried for the next 5 days and I cried. Because I got in touch with a little boy, my little boy. You see, I had written inventories, but I had never written about how I really felt. Oh, I had written inventories and said, "Yeah, I did that and I'm sorry. Yeah, I did that and I feel bad about that. Yeah, I did that and I feel guilty." But I had never written about how I really felt. You see, because all my life, you know, they had told me, "You shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't think that way. Why are you acting that way? Why do you like that guy? Why are you hanging around with them? Why are you dressed like that? That's not the right attitude to have." And when I came to this program, and I wrote these inventories, you know, I wrote them, with an attitude of, "This is the way I should think," or "This is the way I should feel." And they were inventories that were saying, "Hey, I did this and I'm sorry." It was like that old Catholic thing, you know, through my heart, you know. I forget it, but I didn't stay in catechism school too long. You know that one, huh? Yeah. Oh. And so I began to write another inventory. And in this inventory, I began to write about how I felt. I was hot. I was pissed off. And I began to write how I felt. And I got dead serious and I began to take names. And I began to point fingers. You see, because when I came to this program, you know, there was still, you know, some of that stuff coming, you know, through the air, you know. "Well, you shouldn't feel that way. That's not the right attitude," you know. But as I wrote how I really felt, you know.
I said, you know what? You hurt me when I was 5 years old. Fuck you. And you hurt me when I was 6. Fuck you. You know, and you hurt me. And you hurt me. And I was only 10. Fuck you. Because that's how I felt. That's how I really felt. And that's what I had been wanting to say. But for years, you know, they had stopped me from saying that. I did not have the right to feel the way I felt. I don't know about you. I'm talking about me. This is my story. And I began to write. And I wrote. And I wrote. And I wrote. You see, because I come from a home with an alcoholic father. And I had a codependent mother. You see, and I used to wake up in the middle of the night, you know, when I was 3 and 4 and 6 and 7 with screams and banging and being run out in the middle of the night. You see, I came from an environment where I was poor, where I used to put cardboard in my shoes to go to school, man. You see, because we didn't have the money for new shoes. And I remember when they used to have the little PTA, little packets to pass around, you know, to join the PTA. I didn't have a quarter, you see. And that hurt me, you see. But I couldn't tell nobody, you see, because my father was drunk and my mother was trying to make a living, you see. And I remember those times, you know, when we used to let, school used to let out, you know, and the teacher would tell us, now don't forget, when you come back to school in September, don't forget, we're going to write a paper on what you did on your vacation. You're going to have to tell us, you know, what you did on your vacation, where you went. Well, if you're like me and you come from where I come from the ghetto, I come from the radio, man. You know, when we went to a farm, we went to the vacant lot. We dug caves. We built tree houses. You know, that's what we did. We went to the park. We didn't go to Yosemite. Yellowstone. Oh, they'd come back. And they'd say, now, Mary, tell us where you went on vacation. Oh, we went to Yosemite and we saw the bears. And I'd just sit in the back of the room, you know, and I would be ashamed, you know, because they were going to come to me and ask me, where did you go? You see? And that hurt me. I don't know about you. See, I didn't think that counted. See, I didn't think that kind of pain made any difference in my recovery. See, but I began to discover, man, that I had a lot of feelings because I was a feeling person. I've been a feeling person all my life. See, and I remember when I got slapped by a first grade teacher because I didn't want to drink milk. You see, and I didn't have that coming. See, and I was just slapped, you know, like I was a dog. So to shut up and drink my milk against my will. You don't have the right to do that to a child. You see, and I wrote about that, and I said, fuck you, Mrs. Kuiper. And I want you to understand this, and I want to make this very clear. I love my father, and I love my mother dearly. But I had to get to that point where I could love them. And I had to confront my mother, and I confronted my mother. My father's dead. And I confronted my mother, and we had a hellacious. And I told her. I dragged it all out. And my mother got real hot, angry, and we fought, man, one afternoon for about an hour, man. And I pointed my finger at her, you know, and I told her, you know, and you didn't do it alone. I said, my father, man, he fucked up too. And she went, oh. How could I say it against my father? I said, you both did. That's how I feel. I had to do that. You see. And about 2 weeks later, my mother wrote a letter to me. And in this letter, she wrote to me and she told me what she had experienced and what she had done and why she had done it. You know. And it hurt me. But I understood. And I went to see a field of dreams. You know, and I cried. I went with a woman. And I remember her saying, you know what? I said, well, I'm short of my money, man, to go. And she said, I'll take you. Just to see you cry will be worth it. And so we went to see a field of dreams, and I cried. Because I got in touch with my father. And so I wrote this inventory. And I didn't know who I was going to share it with. And one day I went to a recovery house, you know, and I was a leader, you know, and I led the meeting, and I was talking about what had happened to me and this inventory that I had written, and there was this woman sitting in the front row, you know, and the tears was coming down her cheeks as I was talking for 15 minutes. And after I finished, and I didn't know she was going to be the speaker, you know, she hugged me, and she said, I knew I had to be here tonight. I didn't want to come, but I knew I had to be here for some reason. And I asked her to be my sponsor after she spoke. So I have a woman sponsor. Beautiful woman. Thank you, JC. You recover who you want to recover with. I'll recover who I want to recover with. It's my recovery. I've never seen it in print where it says the boys recover with the boys and the women recover with the women. I've never seen it in print. And so I took this inventory. And in this inventory I began to write also about my experiences in jail. You see, because I used to have them homosexual experiences when I was in jail. See, I had a kid because I was a regular. I had a sissy. JC knows about that. See, I had a kid in the penitentiary. See, I didn't feel good about that. See, and I had to write about that. There was a lot of shame there. And I remember when I wrote this first inventory, and I wrote, and I was writing, and I said, and I felt like a Mexican, and she said, oh, we have to write about that. See, I had to write about that issue also. See, you may be Asian, you may be Jewish, your father may have been a transvestite. You may be gay. I saw one of those on Donahue today, I guess. That's why I mentioned it so much. Transvestite. A transvestite. Oh, she was fine. Moses was there, but she's fine. change me. And so I began to write about this. I began to write about the cultural issue that I had. And I began to write about the shame. And I began to write about the guilt, you know. And as I was sharing this inventory with this woman, you know, I broke down and I was crying, and she took me in her arms, you know, and she told me. She said, you didn't do anything wrong. You see, because way back in the beginning, before I got to this program and before I went to the cooker, you see, I had been abandoned. Emotionally. You see, because my mother, after my father had separated, she had taken up with another alcoholic. You see. And for her to maintain this relationship, you know, she abandoned me emotionally. You see. And so I didn't receive any love. And my sponsor began to explain to me that's what had drawn me, these homosexual experiences.
You see, because I was the kind of addict that I didn't have relationships with women when I was using. I don't know about you. I didn't have a woman running for me when I went to jail. You see, I came to this program, you know, with a lot of issues. I came to this program with a sexual issue. When I came to this program, I had what they call a hair trigger. The women know what a hair trigger is. The men ain't copper. Be strong, Holmes. Be strong. And I said, oh, Lord, when I clean up, what's going to happen when I get in the saddle? Yeah. But the women on this program healed me. Sounds funny, doesn't it? But they did. I had a convict armed robbery lead me by the hand down the stairs in the recovery house and lay me with empathy and tenderness and care and understanding, because I had perspiration on my forehead and my palms were sweating because I had never done it clean. I don't know about you. I had never done it clean. I've had some beautiful experiences on this program with the women on this program. Some healthy experiences. That's why I love this program so much. It's given me so much. And so I took this inventory and I shared it, and this woman put her arms around me and she explained to me what was happening. And I began to experience a health that I had never experienced before. And what left me, was this attitude of judgment that I had had for years. You see, because I had acted all my life shameless, without shame, and I was good at it. See, because when you act shameless, you can see everybody's faults. Yeah. But when I got in touch with my shame, when I got in touch with me, I was able to see you. And so the curse has been for me now in the last 2.5 years, is that I can feel. And for 14.5 years, I was always in my head, because that's the way men are. Men live in their heads. And so that's why I say, when I used to hear the women back there and I'd have my legs crossed and I'd hear them going, wah, and I'd say, man, what's wrong with the bitch? But they were talking about how I really felt, but I couldn't feel it. And you cannot heal what you cannot feel. You see. And so now I have that curse that women talk about, feeling. But it's a blessing, because it's enabled me to be with you. When you talk to me, be with you when you're in pain, male and female. And I love it. It's freed me from that attitude. And I'm just grateful for my recovery. Just grateful. And one of the things, for the people that are new, when I came to this program, I had to pause for myself in a recovery house. And I had to look back at my childhood, not about the issues, but how I was as a child. And when I came into this world, I didn't come in as Beaver. I did not come into this world. I did not come down the chute saying, when I grow up, I'm going to be Beaver, and I'm going to shoot dope. I was a little boy man who liked puppies, and liked to build tree houses, and collect spiders in a jar, and climb over fences and steal apricots and plums and build kites and play marbles, and have a little puppy and make a horse out of a broomstick, and play cowboys and Indians. That's the beat. I walked up in the Fee Corner, and I learned to be a dope fiend. And for 14 and a half years, what I did is what I have always done. I came into this program and I created an NA person. And that's why for 14 and a half years, you know, all I did was time. This program is not about time. Get that out of your head. It's not about time. My dog's got time. My dog's got 10 years and he still barks at the mailman. He don't have any recovery. He's got time, though. See, I know how to do time. JC knows how to do time. Get a routine. Hey, just cross them days off. Got another one. Just get yourself a good routine. You want time? Or you can get time. Just get yourself a good little routine going. This program is about recovery. It's about health. It's not about sickness. It's about health. It's a program built on spiritual principles. It's a healing program. We have a God as you understand Him. And that's what excites me about Narcotics Anonymous. My program is a program of recovery. You know, I love recovery. I want to get better. And if it don't get better, I'm going to shoot some dope. If it don't get better, I'm leaving. I'm sorry, I said that when I came to this program. I'm leaving if it don't get better. Because I did not come here for it to get worse. And I'm not here to suffer. I don't know about you. I suffered a long time. I know all about suffering. You want to suffer? Hey, fine. I learned, you know, that recovery, it was always about me. It's always been about me. But before I came to this program, it was all about you. It wasn't about me. One of the most profound things that I heard on this program when I came here is an old timer came up to me and he said, "Hey, man, why don't you give Lawrence a break?" And I said, "What?" I said, "Why don't you give Lawrence a break?" I had never given Lawrence a break. Gave everybody else a break. Never gave Lawrence a break. But I made that decision to give Lawrence a break. And that's what I've done. And this God that I choose to call God, yeah, has been good to me. All my dreams have been experienced on this program. I've experienced all my dreams. All them times when I was on that top bunk or that lower bunk in them institutions, I used to dream about having a home, about being married, about having my own little business, about having a dog, about having a new truck. All came true for me. And that's what this program is about. Having your dreams become a reality. And I want to thank the committee for allowing me to share with you. Thank you. We love y'all too.
disappear. Can't find the reason why I love you.
Love, you hear me? Love.